Tonight, we're going to be talking a message particularly for the young people, and we're not going to use PowerPoint. We're all going to be reading several scriptures together. But before I get into it, I just want to say thank you so very much. I want to thank the elders for inviting me down. I want to thank the church for working together and making this weekend possible. For all those that fed you dinner, you fed me really, really well. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed getting to spend time with Norm and Renita and appreciate them putting me up. I want to thank David for the help on the AV and taking care of those things, even sometimes at short notice. And I want to thank all of y'all for doing the job that you're doing. It's a joy to be here. Y'all are just doing a lot of things right. There's a good energy in this church, just so many healthy, strong examples. And the children that you have here are testimony to the love that you have for God and the love that you have for your children. This doesn't just happen. This happens when parents love God and love their children. And keep it up. And kiddos, we're going to talk to you tonight. So that'll be kids, you know, 2 to 5, listen up. 6 to 10, listen up. 10 to 15, listen up. And kids 16 to 100, listen up. We're going to start with Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6. Oh, and by the way, I'm glad to have a couple of my granddaughters on the row of lovely young ladies up here. And my wife, she and the granddaughters just got in a little bit ago. They had been visiting Bertina's parents down in North Alabama. And by the way, Bertina is a Nashville native. She was born here. She didn't grow up here, moved away when she's a little girl, but she was born here. All right, Ephesians chapter 6. Before this, there's a section that we read Wednesday night about, and Wednesday and Thursday night, about wives and husbands. After this, there's a section that we've read over the last few days about fathers and their duties of training their children. But right in the middle of that, here's what it says. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And then it quotes from the Ten Commandments. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. There's another truism. It tends to do you well when you listen to your parents. There's two verbs in here, and I want you kids to look and see if you can spot them. There's two things it tells the children to do. One is the verb in verse 1, and one is the verb in verse 2. And if you're taking notes, see if you can spot what it is and write down the two different verbs. They're both important, and they're both related, but they're a little bit different. The first one is what? Children, obey your parents in the Lord. Now, if I were to tell my child, you go in there to Walmart and you steal something for me, well, that's not in the Lord. And then say, like Peter said, I'm going to obey God instead of that. But you obey your parents in the Lord. But then the second verb is this, honor your father and mother. So, young guys, let's think about this scenario. Mom tells you to take out the trash. And she says, Daniel, take out the trash. It's overflowing. You're like, oh, why do I always have to take out the trash? And Daniel gets it, and he kind of stomps away with it. Okay? Did Daniel obey the directive to take out the trash? Yes, he did. But Daniel wouldn't do it that way because Daniel also honors his father and mother. Because in the example that I just gave, that wouldn't be honoring, would it? So you got two things to do. One is obey mom and dad. The other is to honor mom and dad. Be respectful to them. And that's going to take us back to the book of Proverbs, where we're going to read several things that are just real important. So let's start with Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1. So the book of Proverbs, a lot of it is set as a father to a son. Now, girls, some of these verses are directed especially to the son, but a lot of the principles you can take and learn as well. There's women in the book of Proverbs. There's the personification of wisdom. If wisdom was a woman, she'd be really frustrated with this world because she's trying to get people to listen and nobody wants to listen. That's a good woman there and people aren't listening. There's an evil woman in chapter 7, and then there's a worthy woman in chapter 31. But let's start here in verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. It's like you young ladies up here at the front. There are so many things you know now that you didn't know 5 years ago. You have learned so much. Now, 5 years from now, you will know even more. 5 years from then, you will know even more and more and more if you are listening and gaining wisdom. We've got a lot of people in the world today, kids, that aren't gaining wisdom. We got a lot of people in this world that are playing stupid games and winning stupid prizes, because they're living foolishly, they're ignoring the word of God, they're not listening to their parents, and to be fair, some of them don't have parents that care much about them. There are some kids today growing up, their parents don't respect God, their parents often don't respect their children, and they're not taking time to train them. And so those kids are missing the advantage that you've got. But as they grow, they could still look and say, I'm not going to live like that. And probably almost every family here has somebody in the past few generations that grew up in a dysfunctional home like that. And then one of the kids decided, like Josiah did, I'm going to serve God. And they can do that. But it's a lot easier when your parents help you from the beginning. So, verse 5, let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. Verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. But like we said this morning, what do fools do? Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So what do you need to do? Verse 8, hear, my son, your father's instruction. Forsake not your mother's teaching. Listen to your parents. I mentioned when the ladies had get together yesterday and we were discussing some different parenting principles. I mentioned one time that I was asked to help out in a situation where a 13-year-old was having, and a mom were really kind of at odds. And the mom asked me to come help. And the mom's sitting over here, and the 13-year-old is sitting there, and the 13-year-old is all kind of solid and everything. And I said to the 13-year-old, I said, do you think your mom knows what it's like to be 13? And she goes, no. It's pretty silly, because guess how old her mom used to be? Right before 14 and right after 12, she spent a whole year being 13. And I said, what's going on here is you don't know. I said, your mom knows what it's like to be a 13-year-old girl, but you don't know what it's like to be a grown mom responsible for a 13-year-old girl. Now, here's the thing. As smart as you guys already are, and as much as you already know, 5 years from now, you're going to know a lot more. And 5 years after that, you're going to know a lot more. And you know when you're going to know even more and more and more and more? when you get as old as your mom and your dad. See, they've already done all that. That doesn't mean your mom and dad know everything. They don't. My kids know for sure that I don't know everything. But you're going to know a lot, and your parents already do. And God has given you parents that are there to help you listen. And so it's your job to listen to them. Let's go over to chapter 2 and read some more about wisdom. My son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you, making your ear attentive to wisdom, inclining your heart to understanding. This is chapter 2, now verse 3. Yes, if you call out for insight, raise your voice for understanding. If you seek for it like silver and search for it like hidden treasure. So I think it was one of the boys the other day said he wanted to be a pirate. And one of the little guys. And pirates sometimes bury hidden treasure. And kids, I want you to imagine if you found out that years ago a pirate lived on your property. And you find an old pirate map. And you find out that that pirate left some buried treasure in your backyard. What would you and your dad start doing? That's right. You'd be digging, and you'd dig it. Would you dig one time and say, oh, I don't see all that gold and silver and pirate stuff? No, no, no. You would dig and dig because you want to get to it. Well, this says, if you will look for wisdom like other people would search for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. You might dig for the treasure and not find it. This says, if you will seek it that way, it says you'll find it. The Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth comes understanding. Drop down to chapter 3 and look at verse 5 and 7. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. I want you to think about that idea of paths. So most everybody got here tonight in a car or truck or van on the interstate or a highway or some of the other roads around here. How did the Israelites travel? A lot of times they traveled by foot. And a lot of times if they're traveling by foot, and maybe through the mountains and different things, they might be walking on a path. And there's some interesting verses in the Bible, especially when we live near the Appalachian Trail. And up in the mountains sometime, I climbed up in the mountains one time in the dark. I was busy trying to get something done. And that's kind of difficult, climbing in the mountains at dark. And I want you to imagine somebody running on the Appalachian Trail at night. If any of you ever hiked the Appalachian Trail, you know there's logs across it, there's roots, there's rocks, various things. The book of Proverbs says that the evil run and don't know what they stumbled at. Because picture somebody running like that in the darkness. You don't have a light, you're just running in the dark. And your foot hits something. You can't see what it was because you're running in the darkness. And you stumble and you're going down and maybe you're tumbling down the hill and it hurts and you're breaking your bones and it's not going well. And you don't know why because you weren't watching. The book of Psalms says, your word is a light to my feet. So by listening to the word of God, we've got a light to our feet to know where to go. And we want to go on the right path. Proverbs is going to talk a lot about this. Jesus will later say, don't choose the broad way that goes to destruction. Take the straight and narrow way. And let's keep reading here some about this path. Let's go over to chapter 4 and start in verse 1. Hear, O my sons, a father's instruction. Be attentive, that you may gain insight. For I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words. Keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom, get insight. Do not forget, do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Don't forsake her and she will keep you. That's wisdom. Love her, she will guard you. The beginning of wisdom is this, get wisdom. Whatever you do, get insight. Prize her highly and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a graceful garland. She will bestow on you a beautiful crown. Hear, my son, and accept my words. Verse 11, I have taught you the way of wisdom. I have led you in paths of righteousness. When you walk, your step will not be hampered. If you run, you will not stumble. Verse 14, do not enter the path of the wicked. Don't do it. There's going to be a lot of people. There's going to be a lot of people in this world that want you guys to walk on the path of evil. There's going to be people in social media that want you to walk the path of evil. There's going to be some bad women and some bad men that want you to walk on the path of evil. There's going to be some greedy business people that want you to walk on the path of evil. The other day, reading about a fellow who applied for a job, and in the interview, they said, what do you think about honesty and ethics? And he said, well, I think we need to have good ethics and ought to be honest. They said, that's not what we're looking for, because they were a crooked company and they didn't want to be honest to people. There's just all sorts of people out there that want you to do what's wrong for all sorts of selfish motives. And one thing they will do is they will offer you something. So back in chapter 1, it said, when sinners entice you, when they say, and there it's a description of the kind of guys that beat up the guy in the story of the Good Samaritan and robbed him. It's that kind of stuff. And it really relates, parents think about it, really relates to what's going on in a lot of inner cities today with the gang activity. Because it's like, you know, throw in your lot with us. We'll all have one purse, you know, and we'll shed blood and all these things. And they're doing these evil things, and it says what they don't realize is the person that they're really destroying is themselves. When people go against God and do wicked things, they hurt other people. But you know who they hurt constantly? Themselves. Because if there's somebody over there across town and he's just a bad person, and being around him is destructive, you know what you and I can do? I'm not going to move by him. You know, I'm not going to work next to him. I'm not going to go places with him. He's a bad person. He's destructive. But you know who can't get away from him? Himself. He's stuck with himself. Look to see an example. Let's finish chapter 4, and then we're going to see the example I'm going to talk about. Drop down to verse in chapter 4. Look at verse 25, last three verses. Let your eyes look directly forward, your gaze be straight before you. Ponder the path of your feet, then all your ways will be sure. Don't swerve to the right or to the left. Turn your foot away from evil. Now here's the example I want to give, and while I'm doing it, you can be turning to Proverbs 23. People that try to get you to sin, and the devil, they'll put something juicy up there. It's like, kind of like when you go fishing. If I go fishing, I've got a hook. But I don't just throw that hook in the water and hope that fish will bite the hook. Because there's nothing interesting about that hook to the fish. He doesn't want that hook. So what am I going to put on that hook? I'm going to put a big juicy worm. Now there might be an old dried up worm on the bottom of the John boat from last month. I'm not going to put that on there because that doesn't look good enough to the fish. So I'm going to put a fresh, big, juicy worm on there. And when the fisherman does that, what does the fish do? Does the fish see the hook? No, the fish doesn't see the hook. What does the fish see? Oh, look at that big juicy worm. Yeah, that's right. And he goes over there and says, oh, that looks good. And he grabs it, and then what does he get? There's the hook. Yeah, and it's not too long later, he's being filleted and fried and eaten with some lemon and some hush puppies, and then the skeleton's going in the trash. And that's kind of what the devil wants to do with us. So he puts lots of big, juicy worms on the hook. We're going to look at one of those, Proverbs 23. And this is about drinking, alcohol, the drunkenness. Verse 29, who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has strife? We're in Proverbs 23, 29. Who has complaint? Who has wounds without cause? Why do I have this black eye? Him. Those who tarry long over wine. Those who go to try mixed wine. Don't look at the wine when? When it's red, when it sparkles in the cup and goes down smoothly. So if you're at a party later and some people are saying, oh, you ought to try this. You ought to try this. And you're looking and it looks real pretty in the cup. And they said, oh, it's really good. See, that's the worm. That's that big juicy worm. But there's a hook. At the beginning, it sparkles in the cup. It goes down smoothly. In the end, it bites like a serpent and stings like an adder. Your eyes will see strange things. Your heart will utter perverse things. You will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, like one who lies on the top of the mast. Have you ever seen those people caught drunk driving and they try to get them walk straight and they can't even do it? They struck me, you will say, but I was not hurt. They beat me, but I don't feel it. When shall I wake? I must have another drink. So lots of people start drinking because they think it's exciting and it's fun. But after you've been doing that for years and years and years and years, and now you're just a drunk, and now you're headed to the bar for happy hour, is that person doing it because it's so exciting? No. So here's the devil's ways tend to do like this. He gives you something up front, and then it starts getting worse. So there's a fellow I know, he's dealt with like a lot of drug addicts. And I've known drug addicts who've told me this as well. I know a fella used to do crack cocaine and sell it and end up in prison. But he said the first time you do it, it's like feels so good. And after that, you keep trying to feel that good again, but you never can. And Art Adams said he deals with heroin addicts. And in the if here's normal, the first time you're way up here, and then you crash. And then you do it again, and you're not quite as high. And then you crash. And then you do it again. And over time, you get to where you're feeling below normal. And now you're feeling way down here, and then you're doing it again. And he says, by this time, the heroin addicts are saying, I'm just trying to feel normal. But then you crash, and you just keep going down. Same thing in Proverbs 5, young men, where it warns against the evil women. There's going to be some evil women start coming up and flirting with you and that type of stuff. Proverbs 5 says, stay away from her. Stay away from her. Look for a woman that's going to want to obey God. And girls and boys both together, if you decide you want to get married, find somebody that loves God more than they love you. That's going to help you a lot. Now, if somebody says, well, I want them to love me the most, that's a really bad decision. In the first place, it makes a whole lot of sense. You don't have a very bright spouse if they think you're better than God, because you're just not. So marry somebody that have enough sense to know that God's better than you. But there's another thing. When you get married, be in love. But marriage is also hard work. And sometimes in marriage, you're not exactly in like. There's going to be some times where your husband is annoyed with you, or your wife is annoyed with you, or you're annoyed with them. And at that time, it really helps that you both love God more than each other. Because if you don't love God and you're mad at your husband or you're mad at your wife, you might say, I'm just going to leave. But if you love God, you know what you do? You realize, you know, this is partly my fault and I'm going to apologize. And you say you're sorry. And you know what they do? They say they're sorry. And you get back together. Find somebody that loves God. But there in Proverbs 5, it talks about this wicked woman. And, yeah, it says she speaks smooth words. She's telling you how handsome you are and all these different things. And you're liking hearing that. But in the end, it's like it says in chapter 7, you know, her slain are many. You know, she's given these lines to many. And it's destructive. Don't do that. It says, be in love and be excited about your own wife, not that strange woman. But there's just all sorts of ways in which the devil's ways offer you some bait, and then it just pulls you down. But you know how God's ways work? God's ways tend to work like this. He gives you something good, and later it'll get better. The old covenant, was it good? But the new covenant, which is the key root word of Hebrews, it's better. You know, you start out on the milk, you advance to the meat. God gives us this body, which is fearfully and wonderfully made, but it's corruptible. And he promises us what kind of a body in the resurrection? A spiritual body that's even better, that's incorruptible. So do that. Wait for that. In fact, I'm going to tell you something. A study was done. It's called it's a marshmallow experiment is what it is. And they did this, I believe, at one of the Northeast universities. It's been repeated other places. Some people have criticized it in the last few years because they say children from an environment where they don't get enough food might just grab the food because they don't know who to trust. And I get that that might not apply there. But for most children, this is really true. First time I read about this experiment, it said that your EQ, that's your emotional quotient, is more important than your IQ. And what this is, for you kids, it means when you have the emotional maturity to wait for something good, that's more important than how good you can do on a math test or something like that, as far as success in life goes. And the test goes like this. They'll take like some 5-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 3-year-olds, whatever. They'll put them in a room, and they'll have the camera on, and they'll put a plate in front of them with a marshmallow. And they'll say, now that's your marshmallow, and you can have it right now if you want it. But I'm about to leave the room for a few minutes. When I come back, if the marshmallow is still there, I'm going to give you another marshmallow, and then you can get to have two. So you can have it now, or you can wait and get two. And first time I read about this experiment, they said that success in life was more dependent on the ability to wait for that second marshmallow than it was how well they could do at school. And you'll see some people that are brilliant. You know, they can win a trivia game, but they're just very immature, like the Israelites in the wilderness, and always worried about what's right here and never what's ahead. And you can watch these, if you want to watch them with your folks and watch these kids do it. Because some kids, they will sit there and they'll just wait. And they know, I'm going to get two marshmallows. And when the person comes back in, they get two marshmallows. And it's kind of like they'd humbled themselves. They'd controlled themselves. I'm going to wait for something better. And they get two. There's some of them that sit there and you start touching it and picking at it, maybe licking it, getting a little bit. And the little boy behind him saying, you're not going to get another one, you know. And then some of the kids are just like, don't be the one marshmallow kid. Be the two marshmallow kid. Be willing to wait for what's better instead of grabbing what's cheap and easy. There's two more things I want to say. One's from Luke 15. Turn over there. This is a parable about the lost son. In the context, I'm not going to be focusing on the main point of the context, but let's acknowledge what it is. Tax collectors and sinners have come to hear Jesus and the Pharisees because they're arrogant, self-righteous, and don't like Jesus for whatever reasons. They're like, he's talking to those bad people. He's eating with them. And Jesus gives three parables. He said, you know, a shepherd, if he's got 100 sheep and one's missing, when that sheep is rescued and comes back, he's happy. Well, angels are happy when sinners repent. And, you know, if a woman has 10 silver coins and she lost one of them and she finds one that was lost, that's the one she was worried about. She's happy. And angels rejoice when sinners repent. And here's sinners coming to hear the word and you're upset about it. Then he gave the last parable about the two sons. And you've got the one son who went away and did evil and the other son. And when he comes back and he repents, the father's glad, but the older son is like the Pharisee. He goes, oh, he's having a party with him. We're not going to read the whole parable, but I want you to note one thing here. Look at the attitude early on in the son that ran away. Verse 11. There was a man who had two sons. We're in Luke 15, 11. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the property that's coming to me. He divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey to a far country. There he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country and he began to be in need. And he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country who sent him in the world to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate. And no one gave him anything. I want you to think for a minute, everybody, about the foolishness of this son and how it represents us when we're not wanting to serve God. This young man is going to come back to the father, but right now he's away. Why did he go to a far country? He didn't go next door. He didn't go to the next town. He went not to a close country. He went to a far country. He was trying to get away from his father. He didn't want a relationship with his father. He didn't want the rules of the father. He didn't want the responsibility. He didn't want to be seen by the father. In fact, you might say he didn't want anything to do with his father, except that's not true. There was one thing he wanted from his father. What did he want? The money. Give me the money, and then I want to do what I want to do. When we were walking against God, we were doing the same thing. Because when we didn't want God's rules, we still wanted his stuff. The most godless atheist, even though he doesn't admit it's God's stuff, the stuff he wants is God's stuff. He wants the sun to come up in the morning. He wants the clean water of rain. He wants God's vegetables. He wants God's animals. He wants God's oxygen. He wants God's beautiful world. We want God's stuff, but when we're being foolish, we want to be in a far country from him. Just give me all the blessings and none of the responsibilities. And that's where this guy was. And for those of you that are teenagers and under teenagers, I want you to think about this. When a child says to their parent, I'm 13 years old, I ought to be able to fill in the blank. I'm 16. I ought to be able to fill in the blank. I'm 18. I ought to be able to. When kids say that, what are they usually filling in the blank with? A privilege or a responsibility? The kids usually come up and say, Mom, Dad, I've been thinking about it. I'm 13. I ought to be able to do the laundry. Dad, you know, I've been thinking, I'm 16. I ought to be able to change the oil. Mom, Dad, I'm 18. I ought to be pitching in on the electric bill. I ought to pitch in on the, you know, property tax. No, that's not what they're saying. They're saying what? I ought to be able to have this. I ought to be able to go here. I ought to be able to be gone. And let me tell you, privilege should come more when responsibility is fulfilled. You fulfill responsibilities and you will get more and more privileges. What was this son thinking at first? I want all the privilege and none of the responsibility. But there's a beautiful part of it. He came to himself. And parents, when did he come to himself? Look at the text, please. Look at the text and see when he came to himself. There's a really important lesson here for parents. In verse 17, he came to himself. Parents, look at the last statement before he came to himself. And what is it? One of you men, read it out to us. Yeah. Don't enable bad behavior. If mom or grandma had sent the Discover card to him, oh, I heard there's a famine, he wouldn't have come to himself. But when he comes to himself, you know what he did? Now he's not asking for, now he's asking for responsibility. One, he apologizes. He said, Father, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight. I don't deserve to be your son. And he was right. But in love and mercy, the Father gives him that. But then what he said, just let me work. Just let me be a servant. He's now learned. You see that? It's not about, I want privilege. Now he wants, let me have a responsibility. Let me serve. So keep that idea in mind. And here's the last thing I want to say. Kiddos, y'all have listened well as we've talked about the family and parenting. And some of y'all have taken notes, and it's very clear that y'all have listened well. But I want to tell you something exciting. And one of you said that you've been thinking about and talking about how to apply these things to make it good for your life in the future, and those type of things. I'm glad to hear that. Someday, you're going to be grown up, and if you choose to marry, you'll be starting your own family. And if you're blessed with kids, you'll be the mom and the dad. In fact, the last time I was here doing these lessons, probably some of the moms and dads here that have children might have been teenagers at that time. And now they're the moms and dads with the kiddos. That'll be you in a few years if you want to get married. And that's the route you go. Here's something I want to leave you with. I want you, everybody here wants you to have a wonderful family if you choose to have a family. Everybody here wants you to have a good marriage. Everybody here wants you to enjoy your children. Everybody here wants you to serve God. And you might think, that's a long, long, long way from now. Well, here's what I want to leave you with. If that's the choice you're going to make, you're already working on your family right now. You know why? Because boys, if you choose to get married, who's going to be the dad and the father? That's right. It's you guys right there. And can a dad and father come from somebody that hadn't prepared themselves? That's right. What you're doing right now is you're building the man that your wife and children are going to be able to depend on. You're building that man right now. And you're getting him wiser and stronger every year. And girls, if you choose to have a family, who's going to be the mother and the wife in that family? That's going to be you. And you know what? You're building that woman right now. And you're getting wiser and stronger. And the more you listen to your parents and listen to God, the stronger you're going to be for your family. And that's going to help you. That's going to help your spouse. That's going to help your children. And that's going to help the kingdom. So I commend you to keep doing that. I'm really impressed with you guys. And I'm impressed with you parents that are raising these wonderful kids. And I just thank you so much for the opportunity to spend a few days with you and get to see the good that you're doing here and discuss these things together. If anybody is in the spiritual condition of that prodigal son and you need to come back to your father, won't you do that as we stand and sing?